So good morning, and welcome to Bhaktivedanta Mana. We're reading today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 13, Text 29 and 30. So I'll read verse 29 first, and then we'll go on to 30. Translation. Thereafter, while pasturing atop Govardhan Hill, the cows looked down to find some green grass, and saw their calves pasturing near Vrindavan, not very far away. So there's no purport to this verse, so we'll read verse 30 now. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. When the cows saw their own calves from the top of Govardhan Hill, they forgot themselves and their caretakers because of increased affection. And although the path was very rough, they ran toward their calves with great anxiety, each running as if with one pair of legs. The milk bags full and flowing with milk, the heads and tails raised, and their humps moving with their necks. They ran forcefully until they reached their calves to feed them. Purport. Generally, the calves and cows are pastured separately. The elderly men take care of the cows, and the small children see to the calves. This time, however, the cows immediately forgot their position as soon as they saw the calves below Govardhan Hill, and they ran with great force, their tails erect and their front and hind legs joined, until they reached their calves. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalitam Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Hare Krishna. Good morning. Hope everybody is wide awake and all refreshed. If you're not, you can take some rest now. So thank you for allowing me to come and speak here. I don't usually speak to a Vaishnava audience. I'm used to speaking to very new people. Especially new Western people, because that's the field I work in. And it works for me because I can say whatever I want, because no one knows anything. Anything you say, they're like, oh, this is great, you know, Radha Govinda, this is awesome. Sometimes I tell them, you know, it's like, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. They go, wow, that's so deep. You know? And here if you say, you know, we're not the body, we're the soul. It's like, yeah, move on, you know, heard this before. Let's talk about something more exciting. But that's kind of what I'm used to, so I don't really speak so much. But I'm very inspired to be here today. Inspiration from Sutapa Prabhu to come and speak. And I'm also happy to see Jayadev Prabhu in the audience, because he's very inspiring. Whenever he's there, I feel comfortable. So thank you for coming. And I'd like to seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis and everybody present here. and not present here, so I can say something for my own purification, and if you get something out of it, then good for you. It said that there's an English saying. It says, it's better to keep your mouth shut and let people think you're an idiot than open your mouth and clear all their doubts. So I don't know so much philosophy either. I know just about like 8 or 10 points in the philosophy, and whenever I give a class, I just say it in a different order every time, so it sounds like a new class, but it's the same thing. Let's see how it goes today. So I wasn't really sure when I was given the verse. So what do you do when you don't know what to speak? I'll tell you what you do. You call your spiritual master and then panic. So that's what I did. So he said, don't worry, I'll help you prepare. So we sat down last Sunday, and then he gave me a few points, which I wrote down. Otherwise, the class would be finished by 8. It may still be finished by 8, but let's see, I'll try and do some justice. There's a Prabhupada pastime that I was thinking of. Once upon a time, Prabhupada was in his room, and Yadurani Mataji. So she was there, and she was trying to get the room all together nicely, and she had to adjust some pictures, so she was trying to adjust them, but one of the pictures was a bit high. So she climbed on a chair, and then she was adjusting the picture, and then she realized that that's Prabhupada's chair, where Prabhupada used to sit on all the time. So then when she realized, she just got off the chair, and she told Prabhupada, oh, Prabhupada, I'm really sorry. She said, I use your chair for standing on your chair to adjust the picture. Is that an offense? And Prabhupada said, no. He said, for service, you can even stand on my head, he says, and do service. So I'm here to do it as a service because I was asked by the Vaishnava, so at least I can sit on the Vyasasana as a service. It's a very elevated position. This is the same Vyasasana, well, not exactly the same, but it is a Vyasasana where Sukadeva Goswami sat, and he spoke to Parikshit Maharaj. The Vyasasana is where Suta Goswami sat and spoke. It's where Vyasadeva used to sit. It's where all elevated Vaishnavas sit. So it's not really me, but as a service, I'm here. So please do forgive me if you think I'm very arrogant to be here. I told Prayojan Prabhu yesterday, I said, Prabhu, are you coming for class? I'm giving class tomorrow. He said, no, you don't give class, Prabhu. Krishna gives class. He said, you just have to get out of the way and let Krishna speak. So if anything goes wrong today, it's not me. one thing I was thinking of, I haven't read the full Bhagavatam. I read the Bhagavatam in different topics I read. I haven't read the whole thing from front to start to finish. But when I was introduced to the Bhagavatam, I was thinking, what's the Bhagavatam about? Because people were asking me. So I would like to ask you a question, that if you were to describe the Bhagavatam to a new person, what would you say? The Bhagavatam is a book about, or the Bhagavatam is a book of what? What would you say? What are your thoughts? Like in one word. Book of devotion? Okay, good. Any other perspectives? The Bhagavatam is a complete science of Godhead. Good, good. Any other ones? Adventure. Amazing adventure, definitely. It's very adventurous, the Bhagavatam. Any other? Anybody from the ladies? It's about the devotees, of Krishna, definitely. So I was thinking, it is a book about devotees of Krishna. It's like if you make it to the Bhagavatam, you must be like a really good devotee. There's a reason why me and you are not in the Bhagavatam and Prahlad Maharaj is, because he's an amazing devotee, like the best of the best. In every category, all the devotees are in the Bhagavatam. So it's like a Guinness book of devotees, like that. But one thing that's very interesting about the Bhagavatam is that there are always things going wrong. Like from the beginning of the Bhagavatam starts with something going wrong. So Parikshit Maharaj is cursed to die. Okay? Second canto, things are going wrong. Dhruva Maharaj comes along later on, things are going wrong. Prahlad Maharaj, things are going really wrong. And by the time it gets to Krishna, it's really like all messed up. And the funny thing is when Krishna comes, when God himself comes, everything's just completely wrong because everyone's trying to kill him right from the start, comes ascending all these demons. And if you see Krishna's life, he's just, in one sense, he's enjoying pastimes with his devotees. But if you explain Krishna's life to a new person, he'll say like, well, Krishna is always running and suffering and fighting. And so you see that in the Bhagavatam, things are always going wrong. So it's like, to me, it's like a book of problems. It's like there's always things going wrong. Guinness Book of Problems, someone may say. But what perception this gives to me is that the Bhagavatam is trying to tell us something by all these pastimes. Usually we have a conception that as soon as we come to spiritual life, that's it, all my problems are solved. Okay, now I'm a devotee, now I'm chanting Hare Krishna, all problems are going to go away. But here is the Bhagavatam telling us, not really. In fact, these devotees are going through even more problems. So I'm just suggesting that maybe the Bhagavatam is trying to tell you that problems are not really a problem and that problems will never go away. But the way in which devotees deal with these problems is what the Bhagavatam is there for. The Bhagavatam is not there to tell you your problems have come to an end, because it's not like that. So Bhagavatam is telling us, if you have a problem, this is how you deal with it. And which is the way that devotees deal with problems in the Bhagavatam? What's the common underlying string that connects everything? What do you think? Shelter of Krishna. So devotees always take shelter of Krishna in whatever problems they have. So your problems are not going to end anytime soon. But the Bhagavatam is there to teach us how to deal with the problem. And then if you do surrender, if you do take shelter of Krishna, the problems will go away and then you'll have fun along the way as well. Because, you know, otherwise out there, if you don't take shelter of Krishna, you'll suffer as everybody else is. But if you do take shelter of Krishna, then it's fun. The problems are there, but it's not so much of a problem. So now Krishna also helps his devotees deal with problems. And throughout the Bhagavatam, in different cantos, you see Krishna helps the devotees in different ways. And he takes various different roles for helping his devotees. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma sansthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So I come to establish dharma, to annihilate the miscreants and to deliver the pious people, to protect them. So Krishna comes for that reason. So can you think of any examples in the Bhagavatam where Krishna comes for this purpose, to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants? Any pastimes, any forms Krishna comes in for this purpose in the Bhagavatam? Yes, definitely, Narsimhadev. So Narsimhadev comes, kills the demons, and you know, that's it, he doesn't hang around. Which are the pastimes? Varahadev, he comes for a purpose, save the pious, annihilate the miscreants, Hiranyaksha, and then he's gone. Anybody else? Any other pastimes? Lord Ramachandra, yes, he comes for a purpose as well. So you see that Krishna comes for this purpose, to deliver the pious, and normally you see these in the first 9 cantos, that Krishna is coming and he's doing different things like that, killing the demons. In the 10th canto, it's a little bit different. And Krishna takes on a different role. Okay, so here he's not coming to kill the demons. His killing the demons is secondary. It's not the main problem. In the 10th canto, when Krishna comes, Krishna is coming to have wonderful pastimes with his devotees. So here Krishna is not acting like God in the 10th canto. In the first 9 cantos, Krishna acts as God. Okay. But in the 10th canto, Krishna is acting as a friend. He's acting as, in different relationships with devotees, he's acting as a friend, he's acting as a beloved, he's acting as, you know, a son. And in different relationship that devotees want, he's acting in that role in the 10th canto. And he's showing that bhakti is the highest. And then if you have bhakti, and if you take shelter of me, then it'll solve all your problems. So that's in the 10th canto. There's another role that Krishna plays as well, now and then, when it's required. And that is the role of correcting devotees. So sometimes we may see that when we develop a little bit of pride, when devotees develop a little bit of pride, then Krishna comes and he teaches them and shows them how to deal with that. So any examples you can think of like that, where Krishna is teaching his devotees? Indra, yes, definitely, Govardhan Puja. So that pastime where it's raining and then Krishna is there teaching Indra. Any other pastimes? Brahma Vimohan Leela, the pastime we're going through in that Leela also. So here Krishna is acting as a spiritual master. So sometimes we think these pastimes, we have a tendency to say that, oh, Indra, he doesn't know what he's doing, you know, he's just too proud, and, you know, Brahma, he's, you know, he's the lord of the universe, but he doesn't know what he's doing. But it's not really like that. Sometimes devotees do make mistakes, and Krishna, as a loving spiritual master, is teaching them. So even in our life, we see that sometimes we make mistakes, we make a lot of mistakes, and the spiritual master tolerates them, and he teaches us like that. So this Leela of Brahma stealing the cows, and then Krishna doing what he does, is like Krishna teaching and playing that role of a spiritual master. And ultimately, Krishna is the original spiritual master. It is said that there are two types of gurus. So there's the Vyasti Guru and the Samasti Guru. So the Samasti Guru is Krishna present in everybody's heart. Okay, so it's the same Krishna in everybody's heart. He knows everything what's going on. And he's also speaking to us. And in fact, Krishna through the heart is speaking to everybody, regardless of whether you're a devotee or not a devotee. Krishna still speaks to you. So now there was one very interesting lecture that I heard a while ago. And the devotee was saying that there's so many thoughts that come into my mind, and it's all a mix of different various things. So it's like you have one speaker, but you got three or four different mics plugged into it. So you hear the sound, but you don't know where it's coming from. So one sound that we're hearing in the mind is the mind, just telling us all sorts of things. One may be the soul, one is the super soul. You know, one may be just random thoughts, I don't know. So there's different things, but we're hearing everything through the mind. So the question is, then how do you recognize which one is Krishna speaking to you? What's the answer? There's so many thoughts. Krishna is speaking to everybody because Krishna is in everybody's heart. So he's speaking to us. How do you know which one's Krishna? Pick the middle one. That's very good. How do you know which one's in the middle? Follow Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Very good. So sometimes we may try and decipher, okay, which one is Krishna. But in the Bhagavatam, there are many instances where it is said that when one is really, really sincere to find out the answer, then Krishna from within comes out and he tells you. So it may not be in the form of Krishna, but Krishna speaks through the spiritual master. So when one develops the sincere desire, then one finds a spiritual master, and Krishna speaks through that spiritual master to us. So he's the same super soul speaking to us. And that is the reason it is said that a guru should be respected as good as God, because even though he's not God, but Krishna from within our heart is speaking through him, because we prayed for that, we asked for it. Krishna in the heart, you can ignore him, you can say whatever you want. Krishna's in the heart, but the guru's in your face. So you can't ask him to go away. So when you're sincere, then Krishna appears in that form. Okay, so that is the pastime here which is going on, Brahma Vimohan Leela. In this specific verse, we see that what's happened here is Agasura has been killed, and after that, Brahma's taken the cowherd boys and the calves and is hidden them somewhere there in Yoganidra. And then Krishna has expanded himself into all the exact cowherd boys and the calves. Okay, so now when they go home, what's happening? What the cows see is Krishna, but of course they're seeing their calves, but they're not ordinary calves. It's the calf expansion of Krishna, you can say. It's a calf incarnation. So Krishna is there in those forms. And then when the mothers see their kids, usually it is said in previous verses we read how the mothers actually had more affection for Krishna than their own children. But in this case, when the children go back, they can't understand it, but they've got the same affection they had for Krishna, for their own children. And they're thinking, why is this? But they just can't control themselves, because Krishna is there. That is Krishna. Their children are now Krishna in a spiritual body. So Krishna is very, very attractive in whichever form he comes. Doesn't matter what form he comes, Krishna is the most attractive. There's something I can think of. Krishna's beauty is absolute. In this world, beauty is relative. Okay? You may find some things beautiful, but not everybody will. Okay? and the other way around. Sometimes I'm on the street. I used to do a lot of book distribution, but haven't done so in the last few years. I need to get back out there a bit more. But sometimes I would be out on the street and, you know, you've seen couples walking together. And sometimes you'll see that, you know, the boy's like smart, handsome and, you know, good looking. And you look at the girl and you go, you know, what happened there, you know? It's like, how does this work? And what's so good about her? But the thing is, you don't have to really see that beauty, because for him, maybe she's the best looking person in the universe, okay? And I was just thinking about this, and there is a morning walk in which Prabhupada talks about this. And he's talking about his own grihastha life. And Prabhupada starts off the conversation starts like this. He says that every man thinks that his wife is the most beautiful in the whole world. And then he says every person has to think like that, because he is forced by the modes of material nature to think like that. Because if he doesn't, then the relationship won't last. So every man has to think that his wife is the most beautiful. And then Prabhupada says, unfortunately, I didn't think my wife was that beautiful. That's why I had to take sannyas. He said, and then he goes on to explain how when he got married, he said, I didn't really like my wife so much. So I went to my father and said, can I marry somebody else? There's this girl, you know, and can I marry her? And then his father said, my dear son, you don't like your wife, but that is a very good thing. He said, and in due course of time, you'll realize why. And then Prabhupada said, now I know. It was very easy for me to leave home. He said, so I just finished reading The Swami in a Strange Land book. And it's an amazing book, very, very well written. And if you have time, you should read it. It's great. Some pastimes in there I hadn't heard of before, which are amazing. So beauty in this world is relative. But we see Krishna's beauty is absolute. So it doesn't matter what form Krishna comes in or what he does, he's always beautiful. Like pigs are not usually beautiful. Okay, sometimes piglets may be cute when they're little, but when they grow big and fat, they're not really so beautiful. But when you say when Krishna comes as a pig, he's worshipped for it, like a boar. Okay, so Varahadev. So he's very beautiful. You know, tortoises, they're not very beautiful, but when Krishna comes as a tortoise, he's very beautiful. So beauty is absolute. And that's why when it comes to Krishna, and that's why when Krishna appears as the calves and the cowherd boys, then the mothers are very, very attracted to Krishna like that. And so it is said that milk is flowing from the cows as they're running down the hill, you know, and like that. So all that's going on. Another important thing that is mentioned in this pastime is the quality of surrender. And sometimes when we hear the word surrender, it sounds very scary, because we think of, you know, Second World War or First World War of something, someone with a gun standing behind you, surrender, and that's why we raise your hand. I think maybe that is the reason we raise our hand when we're in front of the deities, because it's a surrender mudra. It's actually called Samarpan mudra. So Samarpan in Sanskrit means surrender. So that is a surrender mudra. So surrender seems like a very bad thing, and we are usually very cautious, okay, not to surrender. But surrender is actually a very good thing. Let me give you an analogy. Imagine you're on an island, okay? And the island is maybe the island of material things, okay? So there are a few things, there are, you know, a few trees growing here and there, and there are some fruits. It's not all that, it's okay, okay? So you're on that island. And then in the distance, you see another island, which is full of green trees, full of fruits, okay? And it's very nice and lush, and you really want to go there because there's not really much here. So say this island which you're on is like the material island, which is what it is. And the other island is like the spiritual island. Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shri Gauranitai ki jai. Okay, so you want to get to the other island, but the problem here is there's a big strip of water in the middle. So what are you going to do? If you want to get to the other island, you have to let go of this island and you actually have to swim through the ocean to get to the other island. But there will always be a point of time when you'll be in between, when you'll have neither this nor that, okay? Because you're in between both the islands. So we're very afraid of that situation. Because we want to keep the material things on one hand. We want to go to the spiritual realm on the other side, but we don't want to let go of this. But the condition is, if you want to get to the other island, you have to. And you have to go through that state of in-between to get to the spiritual realm. If you don't know swimming like me, then it's a bigger problem. But it's not really a problem, because this Krishna consciousness movement that Prabhupada has established is like a boat. So you don't really have to swim anymore. You can just jump on the boat and then you can go to the other island. So all the facilities are there for you. But we just have to take that step to let go of this and then go through that and get to the other island. So surrender is not a bad thing. I'll tell you a little story of surrender. It's a very mundane story, but it's my story when I was a kid. So hopefully you won't hate me for this. I'll just tell you a little story. When I was young, I was growing up, and we didn't actually come from a very rich family. Like in my whole childhood, I think I had just about 3 toys or something. So one was an elephant, because I like elephants, so this elephant was there. And then after a while, I think my brother found a teddy bear. Okay, now, but the teddy bear, the stitches had come off from where his, you know, the backside. And then I had the teddy bear for a while, but then, you know, after a while all the fluff came out. So then it was just like, so then I used to stick my hand up and use it like a puppet. So that was one of my toys. And then I had a set of cars or something. But there was this exhibition that used to be held in the town I was in. So like a fun fair. So there would be like, you know, and that's the place my father had this thing that whenever we go there every year, you get a new book and you get a new toy. So I used to always look forward to that fun fair, so I can go and get my book and get a new toy. They used to always break because they were cheap toys, but you know, it's still exciting. But one thing that was good in this fair was all the rides. So I don't know if you've been to all these rides, like Alton Towers, or you know, which is the other one, all these theme parks, Drayton Manor or London Dungeon, Thorpe Park. So there's all these rides they used to set up. So one ride I used to really like was the frog ride. So what the frog ride was, it was a very simple thing for kids. So it was like this little train, but it had oval wheels. Okay, so it used to jump as it goes along. So I used to really like that. But what I didn't like was, you know, the Ferris wheel, because it was big and it was very scary. And I didn't really want to go there. But my father used to make me go in that every time. Now, I don't know if you've ever been with Indian families. Sometimes they can be, they're good, but they can be really awkward sometimes. So, you know, I'd be like, I'd tell my dad, Dad, I want to go in that frog ride. So he goes, okay, go in that. And then Dad says, okay, now you got to go in that. But I don't want to go in that. And he'll be like, no, we paid for it in the start. You're the one who brought us here because you wanted to come and enjoy. Now go and enjoy. But I'm like, no, but that doesn't give me any enjoyment. No, but we paid for it. So now you have to enjoy. Otherwise, the money's going to go to waste. So it's like I was forced to enjoy. So... So he used to put me on this this Ferris wheel, and I used to be there. And my father's like, okay, don't worry, I'll sit next to you. So he used to sit there, and my brother and my sister. And then when the Ferris wheel goes up, so I'm like, okay, this is happening. So I used to just close my eyes and then hold on really tight like that, really tight, as if I would stop it from going down. So I'd really hold on to it, and it would go down. I had my eyes closed the whole time. And then the bottom part is the scary part, you know, when the Ferris wheel actually goes down. And I used to like really hold on to it really tight, and you know, used to go up and down and speed up, and it was just horrible, I remember. And till now I don't know what the sight was like from top, because I never opened my eyes throughout the whole thing. He used to take me every year, put me on the same thing. I used to hate it every year. I used to still go for the toys and for the other things, but I used to like really hate it. But he was just teaching me not to be afraid, but you know, like that. But I used to hold on really tight, and I didn't really enjoy it. So anyway, that was that. And then many, many years later, I was at uni with my friends. I never used to go to all these theme parks and all that, but all my friends like, let's go to this theme park. So I was in Leicester. So then we went to Alton Towers. So it's a good theme park. And you know, when you're with friends, you know, you don't really want to say that you're scared. So you want to really look cool and everything. So all my friends like, yeah, let's go into this ride. So there's a ride called Rita in Alton Towers. And it really like, it starts off at 100 miles an hour. It doesn't pick up slowly. It just shoots you out at 100 miles an hour. And then you go everywhere. So he's like, let's go on that. Let's go on that one. I'm like, yeah, let's go, man. And so we queue up for this ride, and we get to the front. And I'm like trying to look cool as well. And so I'm like, yeah, I don't do all this back stuff. Let's go to the front row, you know. So I'm like really scared. But I'm trying to tell him, okay, let's go in the front row. So he's like, okay. And then we go in the front row, and I'm sitting there in the front row. I'm thinking, what am I got myself into, you know? Why am I here? And then, but still, you want to look cool. You don't want to, you know, look scared or anything. So I'm like, it's okay, don't worry. And in my mind, I'm telling myself, okay, this is it. Whatever happens, happens. So I'm just going to let go, the seatbelt's on, okay? And then let's see what happens. I'm not going to hold on to anything. So anyway, it was a bit of a shock when it started because it just shot you out like a bullet. And then, but this time what I did was I just let go. And if you've been on a roller coaster or like a Ferris wheel or something or any of these rides, that's the trick. That's why people get a lot of excitement from theme parks and all these rides and bungee jumping, because it gives you an experience of death with the guarantee that you're not going to die. So it's a bit like that. But you have to surrender if you want to enjoy. If you don't, if you hold on to things, you're not going to enjoy. It's not fun. But the same thing if you surrender it. So that ride, I can tell you, it was actually quite fun. And then we went to all the other rides. So there's one called Oblivion, which goes up, and then it sends you face down like a vertical drop. And then there's a few other ones. So we did all of them. It was quite fun. But what I'm trying to tell you here is that when you surrender, you can actually enjoy the full experience. So like here in the temple, sometimes we have so many desires and we're still trying to balance everything. But there's no such thing as balance. It's what we need to do is we need to do everything in a spiritual way. So when you do surrender to Krishna, then the ride in spiritual life becomes enjoyable. So surrender is a good word. I'm running out of time. I've got so many things. One more thing is that I wanted to say was on that the point that's mentioned here is about if you want to surrender to something, it has to be a person. Beauty means a person. In many, many traditions, they don't have the understanding that God has a form. And I sometimes give tours, I speak to new people, and to introduce spirituality, okay, they're okay with that. If you introduce, you know, we're not the body, we're the soul, everybody's okay with that. Yeah, we're spiritual beings. But when you want to introduce the concept that God is a person, it's actually very, very difficult because they just can't conceive it. Because they start thinking form means you're trying to limit God. But for the experience of surrender, for beauty, there has to be form. If people say that, you can ask them that, do you agree that God is the best in all respects? They say yes. And say, do you agree that God is the most beautiful? They say yes. But then for beauty to exist, there has to be form. Because you wouldn't say the wind is beautiful because you can't see it. It doesn't have a form. Anything to be beautiful has to have a form. Nature has a form. And that's why it's beautiful. But sometimes people are very impersonalistic out there. When I first read Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada writes everywhere about Mayavad. Okay, these people are Mayavadis, Mayavadis. I'd lived 20 years in my life in India. I didn't know what Mayavadis were. I never heard the word before. So I'm thinking, why is Prabhupada writing about these Mayavadis so much? I've never met a Mayavadi in my life. Who are these Mayavadis? But actually, when you speak to people, especially Indian people, and I can say this because I'm Indian, is that when you go a bit deeper, when you scratch the surface, they will accept Krishna, they will accept everybody, but when you go a bit deeper, they think that God is impersonal and whichever form Krishna comes in, God comes in, it's okay, you can worship it. And that's the reason they're worshipping all the different forms. Sometimes you get people out when you're doing books, you know, you get these Indian people who say, yes, I am knowing everything, I'm knowing this. And you try to give them a book and they won't take it because they think they know everything. One very funny thing I saw when actually Sutta Prabhu was distributing books. And if you haven't seen Sutta Prabhu distribute books, you should, because I could watch him all day. He's got many different tricks up his sleeve. And it's also just entertaining watching Sutta Prabhu do books. So we were in Leicester once, I remember, during the summer marathon, and Sutta Prabhu was doing books, and he stopped this old Indian guy, and he took the book and he flicked it, and he went around the back and he said, here, check this out, this is a Bhagavad Gita. And the usual response, he goes, yeah, I have read it, I have this book, I have read it. And then he goes, no, this is part two. As if there was a part two. And then he goes, this Indian guy goes, no, I have read that also. So, I'm, you know, so see, it's just different ways of trying to convince people. But he's even read that the part two of the Bhagavad Gita. So people are very, very impersonalistic deep within. So that is, through these pastimes, the Bhagavatam is also trying to present to us that Krishna is actually a person. Okay. Just moving on a little bit, that's the end of all that. I'm running out of time, so I'll quickly say something about Gopal Bhatta Goswami, because today is the disappearance day of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. So he's a very elevated acharya, one of the six Goswamis, and he met Lord Chaitanya when he was very, very young. In South India, when Lord Chaitanya was traveling, he stayed at the house of Venkat Bhatt, and Gopal Bhatt was only a little kid there. And Lord Chaitanya stayed there for 4 months. So he got a lot of association when he was a little baby. And then Lord Chaitanya blessed him to be an acharya in the future. He was initiated later on by Prabodhananda Saraswati. And he spent a lot of his time at Radhakund. And it is said that he spent about 45 years at Radhakund doing bhajan. And he was very good friends with Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami. And they used to meet very often also. He had 12 Shalagram Silas, and one of them, which was the Damodar Shila, manifested into the Radharaman deity. And this Radharaman is a very beautiful deity in Vrindavan. You can go see him. When I went to the temple first, I was like eagerly waiting, because everyone had told me Radharaman is very beautiful. I'd seen pictures on the internet. When you do Google images, you see pictures, and it always looks big, you know, like a normal picture. So then I was waiting in this temple, and the curtains are closed. And then, you know, the conch blows, the curtains open, and everyone's bowing down, and I'm looking at that. I don't see anything. Where is Krishna? So it's like an empty altar, but then there's screens on the side which focus in, because Krishna is so small, because he's come from a little Shila, so you can't see him, but he's there. So that was Gopal Bhatta Goswami's deity. He also wrote many books. One of them, the most important one, of course, is the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which Gopal Bhatta Goswami wrote in collaboration with Sanatan Goswami. And he also wrote an outline for all the Sandarbhas, which Jiva Goswami later on expounded on. He initiated many disciples. One of the most prominent ones was Srinivas Acharya, who took the Hare Krishna movement to Bengal and all these areas with Narottam Das Thakur and Shyamananda Pandit. So he was a very elevated acharya also. So Srila Gopal Bhatta Goswami ki. So we heard about a few things today from the class. One of the first things was how the Bhagavatam is a book which tells us how to deal with problems. It's telling us your problems are not going to end. But devotees deal with problems in a different way by surrendering to Krishna. So we spoke about that. We spoke about the relationship between Brahma and Krishna, and how Krishna appears in different ways to perform different pastimes. And this particular pastimes is acting as a spiritual master and is teaching Brahma how to behave. And then later on we spoke about beauty, how Krishna is beautiful. Beauty in this world is relative, but Krishna's beauty is absolute. And we spoke about surrender, and how if we surrender, then we can get the full experience in Krishna consciousness. Sorry for waffling on. That was my talk for today. I was very nervous, but like I said, Jayadeva Prabhu made it possible by being here. I hope you got something out of it. If I have committed any offenses, please forgive me. It's time for breakfast. I don't know if we have time for questions. If we have, we can take one or two questions if somebody has any.